this is Severin, and this is Greenhorns Radio. Today is Thursday, and it's 4 o'clock, so we have Greenhorns Radio by Young Farmers for Young Farmers. I'm Severin, I'm your host. Today on the phone, I'm joined by John Clark from Apple Creek Farm in Vermont. John, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, how are you?
Hi there. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Today we're going to talk more about milk. We talked about milk a little bit last week, or the week before last, and we ran into some more questions than we had answers for. So I hope that aside from telling us about your farm and operation, that you'll get into some of the politics and the processes that are governing the production and purchasing of milk in this country. Let's start with who you are and where you're coming from.
I'm in Hyde Park, Vermont. We have a diversified farm. We do organic milk production as well as organic beef, chicken, turkey, guinea fowl, ducks, pasture.
And are
veal.
You currently selling raw milk or are you not?
Yes, we are selling raw milk.
And tell me, if you would, why do you sell raw milk, and why do people buy it from you, and for how much? How much do they pay you for it?
People are currently paying $6 a gallon here at the farm. We sell it because we think it's one of the best nutritional products that are out there for many, many health reasons and beneficial for human consumption. We enjoy having a relationship with our neighbors and people in our community, and it gives us a good connection with them. And people love, I think, coming to a farm and actually getting to react with the farmer.
So in Vermont, it's legal to sell raw milk, but in other states, it's not legal to sell raw milk. Do you mind explaining a little bit about how that happened to be that case?
In Vermont, we're able to sell due to a new law that just passed July 1st. We have a two-tier system. In tier one, it's for folks that would like to sell up to 50 quarts of milk per day. They're able to sell that direct from the farm only and direct to the consumer, not for resale. The tier two is also direct to the consumer, but includes the possibility of delivering milk and is up to 40 gallons a day. And that just started July 1st also.
And those are limitations that have been imposed by what governance body? Who determined that limit? And do you know if it's more or less than in neighboring states?
That varies state to state. We're... some states it's unlimited, and some states it's there's no sale at all allowed. I think we're somewhere in the middle, but I think it's been a lot of years before legislation has been able to look at this two-tier system and see that there's smaller farmers that are wanting to produce food more at the local level, and the. It basically went through our government legislation to determine the final bill, and basically it's overseen by our Department of Agriculture.
So now, just for those who may be interested to move to Vermont tomorrow and start to raise organic raw milk, how many cows' milk does it represent, that limit?
How many cows? That would probably be... five or six cows, seven cows, depending on your production levels.
So you'd have to really put that into a diversified operation. Sounds like perfect amount of cows to get started with, though, if you're just wanting to...
Yeah, I think it would make a very nice nice possibility for folks that want to have a smaller scale farm, and it would probably be quite enjoyable.
It seems like raw milk dairy at that scale may be the only place you would want to get into dairy. I've been reading a little bit about the dairy industry on a few different sites that I wanted to mention to our listeners. One of them is called the Milkweed, which is kind of an alternative dairy journal that has a little bit of a anti-processor stance. And the other one is on Cornucopia Institute, which is also talking about big dairy versus little dairy. And both of those publications have been talking about how the price of farmland is falling down. The prices that farmers are getting is way below the cost of production. And that, you know, basically people are going belly up. And dairy farmers are, you know, among the toughest farmers out there. They've been dealing with crises for the last 30, 40 years, but that it's a very hard time in the dairy world. So my question to you would be, is the raw milk dairy sector stronger than the conventional or organic sector?
Here in Vermont, we primarily have organic and conventional farms, but it's definitely a growing interest, and you're seeing more and more folks getting 1, 2, 3, 4 cows and starting up small dairies at the home scale. I think it's possibly a security thing too, as the way the world's changing and having a more food security of having their own food at home and supplying the local community.
So converts of this raw milk worldview talk a lot about enzymes and fats in the milk. And would you mind giving a little description of what is raw milk and why is everybody so crazy for it that they'll pay so much and go to such a lot of trouble to get the raw milk?
Well, my personal belief about that, and I mean scientific also, is that the enzymes in the milk are in full contact. They're not destroyed by the pasteurization process. Just for instance, one is lactase is, for example, for one, is destroyed through pasteurization, which makes milk harder to digest. So therefore, there becomes people that are lactose intolerant or allergic to milk that often can drink raw milk. Also, all your vitamins and minerals are in their natural form and are more digestible, and especially alongside with those enzymes that help you digest them. So, for instance, in raw milk, you get about 50% more calcium than you do from pasteurized milk. The fat level is going to depend on what breed of cow you are raising and what they're being fed and what season it is. And a whole raw milk is going to be higher fat than pasteurized milk. But the fats, generally on small scale, people are pasturing their cows, feeding them a lot of grass, and you get a whole other nutritional quality, higher omega-3s, conjugated linoleic acid, all these healthy fatty acids that are in full form, fully digestible, and it makes nearly a whole food for folks.
So dairy makes the world go round. I fully believe it. We have a farm full of dairy heads here, and we drive quite a distance, and then whenever anyone's coming by the farms that going on that are south of us, they come and bring us the raw milk, but it's gone instantly, and everyone has got a smile on their face. So I'm also a firm believer in this stuff. Let's talk about antibiotics, because I know that that's another thing people want to know a lot about, is can organic farmers use antibiotics, and in what instances, and then how does that antibiotic stay out of the milk?
On the organic side and on the raw milk side, antibiotics are for organic, certified organic antibiotics are prohibited, except in the case of where it's the only choice to save an animal, and that animal has to be removed from the herd, and the milk cannot enter the milk supply. In the raw milk, it is also, you have to test if any antibiotics are used to prove that your milk is safe. So when you're ready for that animal to re-enter the herd, it has to be tested for antibiotics. And that's a good safety factor due to the fact that a lot of folks are allergic to antibiotics.
And anyway, I was speaking with the cheesemakers up in Vermont, and they were emphasizing to me as well the fact that if there's antibiotic residue in the milk, then you can't make cheese from it. So producers who are linked up with cheesemakers would anyway have to be careful about any residues in their milk. So that there's, you know, this kind of
special vigilance is totally normal. I believe that's true. And I think...
Is that true?
As long as folks are following the standards and testing their milk when an antibiotic has been used, I think it was a good part of the regulation on the raw milk here in Vermont.
So we're discussing raw milk in Vermont with our friend John Clark from Apple Cheek Farm. And I'm here, I'm your hostess on this half hour of Greenhorn Radio. My name is Severin, and we're going to go to a quick little break for music, and then we'll return again and talk some more about raw milk. Welcome back to Greenhorn Radio. This is Severin. I am glad to be here on Thursdays at 4 p.m. And today I'm joined on the air by John Clark of Apple Cheek Farm in Vermont. John is here to talk with us about raw milk, its benefits, its converts, and the economic imperative to get on the raw milk bandwagon if you aren't already on it. It seems like the only safe place to be. John, are you there?
I am on the line, yes.
Great. Thanks for being here. Let's talk, if you would, a little bit about your farm and what else you've got going on other than cows. Maybe you can start with your cows.
Okay. We have a mixed herd, really focused on grass-fed genetic or genetics that are for high forage consuming cows, so we have Shorthorns, Milking Devon, New Zealand Friesian crosses, quite a few varieties of cows I'm experimenting with. And our primary thing on the farm is organic dairy. We ship milk as well as sell to the local community directly. Secondly, we do grass-fed beef, generally Devon crosses. And we do pastured veal that's raised on the pasture with the cows. We also do a pastured poultry operation, which includes turkeys, broilers, egg layers, guinea fowl, and ducks. And another aspect of our farm is an ag tourism business with some llamas and dwarf goats and things like that.
And, John, would you mind describing what's the predominant land use around your farm? Is it other family farms, or is it forest, or what's going on in the hundreds of miles that are around you?
We're in a heavily lot of forest around us, lakes and ponds, and we're kind of in a mountainous area with farms kind of scattered without. Small towns, kind of your typical New England small towns, and farm and forest in between the towns.
And you have a beautiful landscape around you, and it seems like one of the diversifications that you are engaged with is agritourism. Could you comment a little bit about how successful that's been for you as a part of your business? Like, are people really willing to pay to come out and check out your turkeys and geese? And chickens?
Yeah, we have. It's a growing part of our business. It's a newer part. We're just getting into motor coach tours, and we have family tours as well as school field trips. One of the things I really like about it is it gives us a chance to educate people on sustainable farming and give them a direct access to a real working farm, not just a petting zoo or whatever, that they can actually come and see how a farm functions. And hopefully I gain some long-term customers out of the tourism side of it, too.
And you're coming along into an established farm business that your dad and your family set up. I wonder if there's parts of the business that are specifically yours that you got started, and if there's somewhere that you're taking the farm next that is kind of your inspiration. Maybe you could talk a little about that.
Well, I'm really interested in the local food movement. My folks did dairy and maple, and I've kind of added on the pastured poultry and more of the direct retail sales, more farmers markets and those types of things. And so our goal is to have primarily value-added products and direct retail with direct to the consumers with our products, and that we really enjoy marketing and working and meeting people out in the, you know, selling.
So you're selling your local products at the farmers markets? And are you selling to grocery stores? Tell us about your marketing, please.
Not a lot to grocery stores. We're just starting this. Just this month, we started a CSA. We've only had just a few people sign up, but it's only been open for selling shares the last week and a half or 2 weeks here. So that's a new exciting thing for us. That's one method we sell. We do a couple local farmers market, and we live in a kind of a tourist area of Vermont. We're near Stowe, so we sell not only to the local but to Vermont visitors. We are in the process of building a farm store that will be a localvore store, which will include our own farm products as well as other local farm products from the direct area. And our goal is to have a one-stop shop where people can get their locally grown and milled flour, their local vegetables, meat, milk, eggs, oil, basically all the basic needs in one-stop shopping, but from all the local farms.
So I was, my mother just came to visit my farm last weekend, and we were talking about how difficult it was to get our products into the grocery stores, even around here where there's quite a few small independent grocery stores who, should be selling local product, but that there's just a lot of complexity. Maybe you could expand upon that? Why is it that we have such a trouble as producers to get into the grocery stores at a small scale?
Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't really tried to get into grocery stores. I have sold products in our local co-op on occasion, and I do sell to a couple restaurants, but I've not really done a lot in the wholesale. We're looking to possibly increase a couple more restaurants, but I'm really excited about the direct retail, both local and possibly regionally. We're 3.5 hours out of Boston, so we have some urban areas close to us that I wouldn't mind traveling if I had a set customer base to retail my products.
Well, so thank you so much for coming to join us. I have one last question for you, and then you can tag on any other info that you want to about upcoming events or your website and stuff. But tell me, who are your farming heroes, and where do you look to for inspiration and kind of mentorship for the operation that you are running there on the farm? Are you another one of these Salatin converts?
Well, I definitely follow Salatin stuff, and we have a similar operation here with everything rotated on pasture and chickens following the cows and, things like that to help kind of keep a balanced system. And I do enjoy his readings, and was fortunate enough that he came to visit Vermont last year with the Rural Vermont organization, which I'm a board member of. And Rural Vermont was actually wrote the original bill that was entered into the legislature for this bill. It was changed as other interests came in, but the original bill was written by Rural Vermont, and I've really enjoyed working with them on local food and food with dignity. We're very fortunate here. We have a multitude of organizations that work with farmers and get farmers together. NOFA Vermont and the Grass Farmers, Vermont Grass Farmers Association, and Rural Vermont, all these organizations put on workshops and how to do on-farm butchering or raw milk production or pasture management. And so there's a really great network of farmers here and farm organizations that are all focused on sustainable farming.
So, well, thank you so much for coming and speaking with us. And I want to remind our listeners that this is Greenhorns Radio. I'm your host, Severin. And that many, many events and activities relevant to young farmers, news and gossip, video ephemera, politics, and all sorts of other things are available every day at your fingertips on our blog, www.thegreenhorns.wordpress.com. You can also listen to an archive of this show by going to heritageradionetwork.com. A thank you once again to our sponsor, Hearst Ranch, wonderful grass-fed beef company who make this show possible, and many others as well. We thank them, we thank you, and we are thankful to be the Young Farmers of America. It is a sunny day, and I say thank you very much. Bye-bye.
And thank you. And if people need information on our farm, it's www.applecheekfarm.com.